Audio Drama Production Podcast, Episode 43. Drop your listener into the action.
The Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name's Robert. Matthew's with me.
I am. Hello.
And this week we'll be looking at dropping the listener into the action. But before we get to that, let me just remind you, our virtual home is audiodramaproduction.com, and we're often hanging out in our Facebook group, Audio Drama Production Podcast. So, introductions are over with. Let's get to it, Mr. Matthew.
Yeah, well, a wee episode focusing on the sort of writing of audio drama, sort of continuing on from last week when we had Eli on. Just want to start with a wee quote here from Mr. Tim Crook, who wrote the Radio Drama Theory and Practice book, a book I'm well familiar with now that the dissertation I'm currently doing is bound and handed in.
Yep.
But I'll put links to this site on the show notes. It's from the Principles of Writing Radio Drama. Tim Crook says, in the beginning is everything. If this part of it does not work, you're up the creek without a paddle. Your listeners will desert you. The moment of arrival, he talks about, this is how you drop your listeners into the story. Don't give them a warm bed with comfortable pillows and a hot water bottle. The background and subtext of previous histories is better explored through revelation and dramatic action. So parachute your listener into a top dramatic moment, not the climax. That would be premature. Find the moment to join the story. Avoid the slow snails. Explicitary route? Explicitary, Robert? I'm not familiar with that word.
Explicatory.
Explicatory, right. It's not English I'm studying, incidentally. kick them into a high-energy trip and whoosh them through the rapids. Quite profound words there from Mr. Crook, and certainly very relevant from a writer's perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about it later on, I'm sure, but what he's getting at there is you may well have written all the background to who your character is, how they've gotten there, what's going on, and you'll have devised how you build up to the present story. And you want to get that out there. You want to tell them, because look at all the hard work you've put in. Well, don't. And we'll cover examples of famous stories where you're dropped right into it. You've not covered how that person woke up and brushed his teeth and or combed her hair and then went out the front door and went to the action. It's bang, you're in the war zone, or you're in the restaurant and it's kicking off or whatever.
I'm wondering if, like, as a fiction consumer, I'm wondering if this sort of lack of patience, if you like, goes back to when we were young. Certainly from a personal point of view, when I was a child and my granddad used to take me to the library on a Friday after school. Used to go to the library. It's shut now, as is everything around here. But when I was sort of transitioning from, you know, the sort of like illustrated, you got books about like, is there life on other planets and ghosts and things like that. I was really into all those books.
But, 6 words per page.
Yeah, they were pretty heavily, not like really young kids' books, but you know, you were sort of more grown up, but you still had illustrations. Yeah. I was transitioning away from that into wanting to get into to reading some novels.
No and, pictures, just word after
yeah,
word.
Just words. And obviously, you know, still quite young, and first and foremost, you're attracted to the cover of the book. I loved horror stuff, so it was all horror stuff. You got some really good illustrations on the covers, and of course the synopsis is designed to catch you straight away. So I would read things like that and see these great covers and think, oh, this sounds brilliant. And not all of the books I got, but some of them, you'd open them and suddenly, you know, the main character's just going about his mundane life or her mundane life and not much is happening. And you get a few pages in and you're like, I didn't sign up for this. I want action.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't have action throughout your entire story. You've got to have these moments of character building, but it just wasn't enough to hook me, and therefore I didn't finish the book. And that is relevant, maybe more so in audio, where a listener has a lot of, you know, at the switch of a button, they could be listening to something else, can't they? So it's important to sort of hook them early on.
I would say, especially with audio drama, you've got less time. They say that in commercial radio and the likes, maybe a bad example, but you've got something like 30 seconds to hook your listener or less. Otherwise, it's game over. They've switched over because it's so easy to switch over and so difficult to engage somebody without them just, you know, feasting their eyes on something. If it's not something to catch, let's face it, as mammals, it's our primary sense, as primates, eyesight. So if you're going to use something like the ears to catch somebody, you've got a very limited amount of time. So you want to really pack your best punch.
So before we take a look at maybe how, you know, some of the ways that we might be able to do this, telling various stories in audio drama, Robert, you've got some examples there of ways that you've found it done maybe in films and things like that, ways that the listener or the viewer in that case has sort of dropped into the action. And then after that, the story's pulled back and bits of the details go on to emerge from there.
Yeah, I actually spent a lot of the weekend thinking about this and taking some notes, trying to think of some really good opening scenes and reverse engineer them, try and work out, you know, what made them good. So, you know, you want to write a great opening scene every time. I would suggest to anyone, you know, we've all watched a lot of films over the years. Try and think about all the films you've seen. How many of their opening scenes can you actually remember? You know, because there'll be a lot of films that you really like, but can you remember exactly how it starts out? See if the ones you can remember. And the ones you can remember with ease, why would that be? So we'll consider some famous films. One of your favourites, Matthew, Star Wars. First off, it's in space. Wow, yes, there's a spaceship. It's flying overhead. Bear in mind, this is 1977. And oh my god, it's being chased by a spaceship that's 10 times bigger. Are you aware of this? That's the premise that was the opening thing, that you had this spaceship and then this other thing which was like 1,000 times bigger, and that was the whole, oh my gosh, wow, lasers. Basically, back in the day, there'd been nothing quite like it before, and it blew people away, and it told you that this film is about good versus evil in space. Godfather. Have you seen Godfather?
I think I have.
Right.
Years ago.
Personally, I actually couldn't quite remember how it started off, but I checked it, and it's in his study. It's mysterious, it's intriguing, it's really dark. He's granting an audience to this man who's telling him about his problems. In exchange for friendship, he offers to take care of the problem where the man's daughter had been badly assaulted by some young men. Don Corleone, he arranges to have the problem taken care of, very careful and considered. And he sort of basically emotionally manipulates the man. By the end of the scene, you know who this man is. He's the head of the mafia. He operates beyond the law. He's charismatic. He's powerful. He is the film. He is the Godfather. So that's how that goes. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Opening scenes. The opening gambit, if you like, before the opening credits. The jungle, traps, peril, danger, superstitious natives with blowpipes. He uses the whip. He gets out a religious artifact. He makes mistakes. You know, that's one of the most endearing things about Indiana Jones, the character. He's not like James Bond or Batman. He's flawed. He made those mistakes like trusting the wrong people to help him. He sets the boulder off that chases him, and he just manages to get out. He gets the artifact taken off him. It is basically Raiders of the Lost Ark all in that opening scene. Everything about it. Saving Private Ryan. I've tried to mix this up a little bit and not just all be films that I liked, you know. I mean, I did like Saving Private Ryan, but it's kind of a different film, you know. Have you seen that one?
I don't know. Stop asking me if I've seen films. I don't watch a lot of films.
Aye, fair enough. All right, well, a lot of people will know the opening scene is on the beach when they do the Normandy landings, and people are getting killed. It's really visceral. It's gritty. People are dying by the score. You know, it's ultimately tragic, and there's no glory there. It's just the awful reality of it. And lastly, Pulp Fiction. It's a crazy, eclectic film. It's all over the place. The scenes are famously shown out of chronological order. The opening scene is in a diner, shows a loved-up couple who suddenly turn into a pair of psychotic armed robbers. Juxtaposition in your face. And that's the film. Boom.
I have seen Pulp Fiction.
Fabulous.
Just last year, wrote an essay about it.
Yeah?
So there.
And do you like the film?
Yeah, I did like it.
And it broke a lot of rules, didn't it? But at the same time, it followed the rule we're talking about here, is that you want to hook your listeners straight away with something dynamic. You don't know where this young couple's come from, what they're all about, you know, apart from the fact that they suddenly are armed robbers. And something to bear in mind for later on, the last scene at the end of the film follows on from where the first scene ends. And that, you know, sounds like it shouldn't work, but it does. Because by the time we join up with them, we know exactly who this couple are, Well, do we? Not really, I guess. But we've had time to think, get used to the style of the film. So, we've talked about those opening scenes. Here's a few things that I think we can learn from them. One, as we've discussed, you want to grab your audience immediately. It sounds obvious, but it is absolutely key. You've got minutes or even seconds to get them hooked in. Two, be relevant. Set the scene. And this means doing everything that suits the rest of the film. You know, you've got to use the right music, the right mood, the setting. And this is your chance to get the listener into the right frame of mind for the overall story. You really want to ground us, the audience, in your protagonist's reality, the status quo, if you will. And we talked about that before in writing stories, is that, you know, stage one of a story is the stasis, as in what's normal, what's reality before the big change comes, whatever it happens to be. And three, I would say your opening scene, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, can have its own story arc. That was a whole story in a nutshell before the credits. It can have its own story arc, but should also propel you to the rest of the story. It should be relevant. Make it stand on its own 2 feet, of course, and not just be exposition or an introduction, but potentially hold the key to the climax of the main story. And a couple of things to avoid, I think. Irrelevance, slow starts. Don't kind of cover that already, but don't chuck in stuff that you don't need just because you've got it written down and you want to use it at some point. Don't describe the scenery or the weather like your book that you were talking about earlier. Don't just fill it in with stuff for the sake of it. And you don't have to start at the beginning of your story. Just because you've written the background doesn't mean you have to use it all, if ever. Get into it, find the right moment to drop in where you've joined it mid-fight. And don't use too many characters. That is something that does happen. Especially in your opening scene. Don't have 7 main characters because you don't have time to learn them all.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's not exactly on topic, but we covered this before where we talked about, especially when you're dealing with sort of fantasy or other worldly universes where the names aren't quite the same. A lot of made-up names. And I've read books in the past, I think I mentioned one in the Warhammer universe where it was the elves, and they were just throwing names at you. You know, none of the names you'd ever seen before, they don't really exist.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa, you know, could we not have spent a bit of time with 2 characters now?
Yeah.
Don't just throw all these characters at me and expect me to remember them.
And I suspect I've said this before, but in some of the Game of Thrones books, you'll get a load of different characters' names because it is a big universe. And I'm like, I can't remember who that is. Who's Jondre again? Is that this? No, I don't know. And you end up flicking back a few pages. So, something to avoid it, especially in your opening scene, because it is the most important. You want to hook them. Don't fill them with too much information. 1 or 2 characters, maybe even 1. And lastly, it was something I thought about was avoiding cliches like dream sequences. You know, I think that's been done to death. Maybe somebody's like standing on a balcony and they recall, ah yes, I remember India, 1853. My God, what a summer it was. Then you're just like, oh, that was it a flashback or was it just the narrator telling you what's going to happen? And then this happened. Let's go there now, shall we? So yeah, don't do that. Heavy narration, try and avoid that if you can. Cliches. You can use cliches exist because they're good or they were good or they were popular, but they've been overused. And if you've got an established story or characters, then you'll get away with the odd cliche. You absolutely will. Not in your opening scene. You've got to be at your best.
So I came up with some suggestions or frameworks, if you like, for, you know, if we were creating an audio drama, how we would try and execute this technique.
Yeah.
So the first one I've got here, I've got telling an alien invasion story. You could open with said invading aliens obliterating another planet before turning their sights to Earth. After that, you've hooked the listener. You can then take them to your protagonist as she's going about her everyday business, unaware of the impending apocalypse. So at that point, the listener has seen that there's a very aggressive alien race out there. They're conquering, they're killing. So that's in the story at that point. That's hopefully enough to hook them if you've done it well enough. And then when you go back to your main character, you know, they are going about their mundane business. But that's fine because the listener has had a sample of what's to come.
Yeah, like a prologue almost, I guess.
Yeah. Another wee example I've got here, telling an outbreak story. So you can start with patient zero, biting or scratching his way out of a medical facility on a faraway continent. At that point, you can transport the listener over to your protagonist, again going about his or her everyday life with nothing more than a few news bulletins about a case of rabies, because it's always rabies, isn't it, in the at the start of outbreak films. No one's ever that worried, because it's just rabies.
Even in the book World War Zero, it was African rabies.
Yeah, which... whatever that means.
Yeah, it's a disease from far away, so we'll call it somewhere far away and something that's a disease. So.
And no one really panics, but yet here, when there's a wee like fuel strike or that, it's you know, the apocalypse.
Yeah. So. The supermarkets getting their windows bricked and that. Yeah. Snow does it to us.
Yeah.
Ebola wasn't so bad, but snow, oh my gosh.
Yeah, we can't take that.
Yeah.
Third example here, I've got, if you're telling a sprawling fantasy story, so don't start with your hobbit, gnome or villager going about the mundane tasks of his or her boring life in the small village they probably live. First, you could open with the gruesome undead army of an evil necromancer smashing its way through a far-off city, or groups of marauding orcs setting fire to the town on the other side of the mountains, or even a powerful wizard conjuring up some ancient and terrible demon. And then you head back to your hero or heroine's everyday life. The listener knows all hell is about to break loose, and they want to stay with your character to find out how they'll be involved, how they'll cope, and ultimately whether or not they'll save the day or the world.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you seen Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Right. Ah, that's good. Because I was thinking, yeah, but Lord of the Rings does start off with the hobbits in their home. And then I thought, no, wait, no, it doesn't. It starts off with the marauding army of orcs smashing hell.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Because I did wonder about that. I mean, I didn't rip off that example, but as far as I knew, Lord of the Rings did start that way. But I thought, well, you know, back in Tolkien's day, that was kind of the way stories started.
Well, I think the books start off very slow, and famously they do. It's been a while since I've read Lord of the Rings. But there was like the first 300 pages were about trees.
Yeah. Well, apparently, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before, I read a sort of book about writing fiction a few years ago, and they were saying that, you know, back in the day, books would be very, very descriptive at the start.
Yeah.
And the reason really is because nowadays, that's not necessary, because we've all seen pictures of different places. We travel the world, it's very easy to get to country to country. But, you know, in the 1800s and in the turn of the last century, people didn't really move about that much. They had no internet or anything. So the descriptions of a mountain in a jungle or a big tropical ocean were necessary for people, because they hadn't necessarily seen it before or seen any imagery from it before. But that's not relevant now, because...
That was their Google.
Yeah. I mean, we're all well aware of what these things look like now. So it's not so necessary to do all that sort of description.
Whereas if we said, oh, it was from the Middle East, you'd have a rough idea. You wouldn't have to go into all these, he had skin like sandstone, and he had a dark hair, blah, 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 and all these really vivid descriptions of that almost sound like they're a mythical creature, you know. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was from Tehran.
H.P. Lovecraft describing the room for a few pages before he gets to the undescribable terror and the really racistly named cat.
Yeah.
I do like H.P. Lovecraft, aside for the whole racist cat thing.
Yeah, apart from that, yeah. It was of its time. But my English teacher actually told me off for that once when I described this fine meal in a story as it was indescribably good, and he went, nope. Nope, you can't use that word. You've got a vocabulary of whatever it is, 40,000 or something. I'm pretty sure you'll find a few words in there to describe a meal. So, yeah, I've never said that again since. You know, oh, nondescript. No, no. If you can look at it and say words that come to mind, you're describing, it's fine. So, some interesting stuff there. And it's true what you're saying about how we've evolved as audiences. You can't get away with filling stuff out anymore. It's, you've got to hook them, partly because we're lazy or impatient, but also because, yes, we know what wizards do, we know what orcs do, we know what the undead does. We know about sci-fi, about transporter beams. You don't have to explain them to us. Let's get to it. Boom.
And, you know, remember, when you're creating fiction, when you're creating content for an audience, you're competing with all the other content creators out there. You really have to be at the top of your game. Not all the people that listen to your show are doing it as a favour, you know, friends or relatives. You know, when you start expanding and looking for an audience that you're growing organically, they've no loyalty to you, certainly. So you've got to entertain them. Otherwise, they'll find someone else who will.
Yeah, that's right. And as well with your opening scenes, when you know you were talking about going back to this, the stasis of the character doing all right, they're going to the shops, they don't realise the crazy world they're going to go into soon. Their stasis doesn't have to be necessarily peaceful. It could be a crazy adventure. Like, say, in a lot of the old Spider-Man comics, for instance, it wouldn't start right in the middle of his battle with Doc Ock, Dr. Octopus. But it would probably... It wouldn't have him sit on the couch scratching his ass, for instance. He would be out foiling bank robbers. Okay, not the biggest villain in the world, but it's him in action to show you what he's all about.
Yeah.
You know? So it doesn't have to be the Hobbit tending his garden before he then has his world turned upside down as he goes off to Middle-earth. But maybe that Hobbit could have been, you know, fighting or something.
Yeah,
in the tavern.
I mean, your protagonist isn't always going to have a mundane existence, especially if they are already a bit of a heroic character.
Yeah.
It's not all the average Joe stuff with the protagonist. And another thing I should have really mentioned, in my examples there, you know, that's all very linear sort of, you know, the story's progressing in real time, if you like. So these events are taking place probably at the same time as it's cutting back to your protagonist's life. But you could even... There's no real rules with these things. You could start... Say your story has a big climax, a big fight, a big battle. You could even open your story before the final blow and the last fight is struck.
Yeah.
And then you can start again. You know, you can go right back. I've seen that done in TV shows and films before.
Yeah.
Where the film starts at the end and then takes the viewer or the listener or the reader back to the start, and you know, they're hooked because they know they're going to reach that point, but now they're going to be filled in with the backstory.
I wonder as well if it's TV series when they're making pilots and they think, well, this is our chance to really secure some funding here. Like Breaking Bad, the opening episode of that starts off with, like, kind of near the end of the episode where something absolutely crazy happens and he ends up standing in his pants holding a gun ready to take on the police. And when I say pants, I mean underpants. If you've seen the episode, you'll know. And then after the credits, it then cuts back to good old Walter White, and he's a chemistry teacher, and it builds up to the end of the episode, if you like. The other one I was thinking was American Beauty, starring Kevin Spacey. It starts off with him saying, yeah, this is me, and I'm dead. I've been shot through the head. All right. And he's narrating it, and he starts talking about his life as it is at the beginning of the film, which is, you know, well before he dies. But he's put it up there saying, oh, by the way, I'm dead, and let's see how it unfolds. And it's, I thought it was really strange. Like, oh, wow, right, he's dead. Does that not take the excitement out of what's going to happen? And it doesn't. If you're going to watch the film, I haven't really spoiled anything, because he tells you he's dead in the opening monologue. But the film is really, really quite a good film to watch. It's really exciting, and it's interesting, and it's out there, and it's different. And they knew they were making a kind of a brave move by putting that up front. So, as you say, the rules are there to be broken. As long as you make it interesting, I think you can do whatever you like, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's it. Just be creative. And, you know, if you've executed something like this with an audio drama, we'd love to hear some examples. And you can get in touch with us at podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
Yeah. I've probably said this before as well. Star Wars doesn't even have credits. Opening credits. And they were famous for doing so, or for not doing so, because he kept, George Lucas kept getting fined $250,000 or something.
Thug life.
Yeah.
Just said no.
Yeah, not bothered. Do what you like. I think the producer, Irwin Kershner of the sequel, Empire Strikes Back, he got fined and George was like, yeah, no. No opening credits. I'll pay the fine. Don't you worry about it. I've got it right here. I've just sold 700 Chewbacca's in a box, so it's fine. I've got the money. Yeah, just another case of where they broke the rules. And it's something I didn't even notice for years. Until I read it in the 90s or something. Like, yeah, he didn't have any opening credits. I'm like, did he not? But there's the writing that goes up at the beginning of the film. Yeah, but that's not credits. It doesn't say Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Just a bit of narration, sort of. Written narration, if you like. Subtitles.
There you go.
Yeah, go ahead. Break the rules. As long as you do it loud and fast, you'll be fine.
So I think that's us on that topic. Like I say, get in touch with your own thoughts and examples. Not too much on the show this week. We had a wee email in from Joey Madia. Madia, would that be?
Madia?
Madia.
I would say maybe.
Sorry, Joey. We seem to butcher people's names every week, or I do anyway.
Yeah.
But Joey, of the website 7storiestheatre.org, he says, thanks so much for the excellent podcasts. I am new to working on audio scripts after being a playwright and novelist for many years. The episode with Eli McElveen on dialogue had several great reminders as I go. I'm writing a standalone episode for a producer as well as a 12-script serial for another that is X-Files and Fringe meets Supernatural. Much continued success. Thanks very much for that, Joey, and look forward to checking that out as well.
Yeah, lovely. I've never seen Fringe, actually, but whenever I'm in like a second-hand store that does this sort of thing, like computer games and box sets, I always have a look to see if there's a Fringe box set. Because I've been told it's rather good. That's it. That's all I've got on that.
And all we've really got aside from that is, you know, if you listen to the episode last week, we were talking about potentially organising a meet-up in 2016, an audio drama event in England somewhere. So we've got a survey on the go, and we're still looking for people to fill that out as well. So get on there, it'll be in the show notes. And yeah. A few weeks from now, we could start sort of looking at some of the results and see if we're going to go ahead with it or not.
Yeah, it would be really exciting. I really hope that it happens. And even if it doesn't happen on the scale that we want it to, I'd still be interested in going down to meet up with a handful of people and meet in a pub. We don't have to book a room or anything, just something. Let me get out of the house.
Yeah, it'd be...
It's been a while since we got the train anywhere.
But that's really it for this week. We're in the car again, as you might as you might have gathered. it's a car with not very much petrol in it. I can't believe I actually made it here, to be honest.
Right.
I'm not sure I'll make it back. I have to go for a haircut now, and I don't even have any money because Julia's got my wallet in her bag. We went for a long walk yesterday, ended up in the pub. As you do on a Sunday. It's Monday time of recording. So I don't have any money and I'm not sure what I'm going to do when the hairdresser gets here.
I see. What, she's cutting your hair in the car?
In the house. In the house, the old-fashioned way.
Right, coming to the house. How posh.
So I can't run away, you know, like you do with taxis.
Right, yeah, just bail in the middle of the night or whatever.
Or I could run away, but then, you know, she'd have my house. And, yeah. I'm not sure, like, £10 is worth that, so...
There she is, holding the deeds.
I think I've got a bank with change in it, so she'll be getting paid in 10 pences.
Right. Can't you do it a voice reel or something and say, well, there you go, that's worth 100, but we'll call it quits?
I'm not sure she'd be up for that, but
right.
I could make her the offer. Maybe I could...
Free ebook.
Yeah, maybe I could give her the Aftermath back catalogue for free.
Yeah.
Because obviously that costs a lot of money if you buy it online.
Any comedy sequels on DVD that you could give her starring Whoopi Goldberg?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I just handed a bunch of stuff into the charity shop the other day, DVDs and games and stuff.
Right.
Actually, what I was going to do, because I've finished my dissertation now, I had a couple of books that I'd used that don't really have... you know, they don't have enough value to be worth selling on Amazon.
Right.
Anything like that's going to go for under a tenner is just not really worth the hassle.
Yeah.
But if anyone that listens to the podcast wants them, I'd be certainly prepared to send them to them for free.
You could not have given them a more vague description, I have to say.
Yeah, well, I wish I'd brought them, because then I could have said what they were. They might be nothing to do with audio drama. They are.
If anyone would like items...
A book. You want a book. No, I should really just have mentioned that next week when I had the books to hand. I've been premature with this, but yeah. Ignore it. Just ignore it.
Fantastic. It's not by Tim Crooks, is it?
No, I've not got a physical copy of his. I've got one on the Kindle, right, which was an absolute nightmare to reference.
Oh, God.
I've got, like, the oldest Kindle ever. And, right, it's not so easy to flick back and forward. But
Oh, is it, like, button pressing? And,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Page 8, page 9, come on, 704.
And I don't know if this was Tim Crook's fault, but his table of contents in the Kindle version of that book. Chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3... Chapter 4, like, nothing else, just chapters.
Doesn't even tell you what it is.
No, just chapter 1, chapter 2.
But you already know the numbers 1 to 100.
Yeah, I had that.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, that's it for this week. Don't know what's on the show next week. I had said on Facebook the other day that we were really keen to get some other interviewees, people with topics they want to discuss and things like that on the show. So if you want to do that, if you want to come on the show, please get in touch. Again, it's podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
That's right. If you've got any thoughts about the kind of thing you want to hear, if you've enjoyed what we've talked about today, let us know. If you want maybe to look at more technical things again, it's been a while since we looked at microphones and so on. Maybe there's been some developments, I don't know. Anything at all, talk to us. If you want us to review your new drama, we'd be more than happy to do that.
Would we? I don't know about reviewing. Like,
well, talking about it, at least it doesn't have to be a really tough critique or anything. But
I'll leave that to you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's something we did at uni that I always wanted to do afterwards, kind of. So, I had to sit through hours and hours of radio dramas while we all listened and took notes and discussed what was good and bad about it. So I want that knowledge to be useful now. So, yeah, if you've got any suggestions, get in touch. Otherwise, hang loose, stay cool, keep your feet on the ground. May your days be long and the hardships few, and catch you next week.
Yep, cheerio.
Ta-ta.